From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Well, it's happened again, another hospital, an operation that wasn't supposed to be. Children's Hospital of Orange County, California, says a child received surgery on the wrong body part this week, but no permanent harm was done. No permanent harm. The mistake is the third of its kind in 4 years, and state regulators are investigating. A hospital spokesperson says one of the surgeons was supposed to loosen a fold of tissue behind the child's upper lip, but instead loosened the tissue under the tongue. The intended procedure, they said, was performed, and the child was sent home. But man, those are nightmares. Well, you know, you've heard the old saying, don't bite the hand that feeds you. How about, or the hand that saves you? Here in Los Angeles, a firefighter has been hospitalized with severe hand and arm injuries after being bitten by a dog that he hoisted from the storm-swollen Los Angeles River in a daring helicopter rescue. Fire officials say that he was taken to County USC Medical Center after rescuing the German Shepherd. The dog was in the water for some time, probably was going to drown. The firefighter just made an incredibly heroic effort to pull him out of the water, saved him, but I guess the dog panicked so much he bit him and bit him badly. A Georgia woman is in jail after police say she forced her son to kill his pet hamster with a hammer as punishment for bad grades. The sheriff of rural Meriwether County says that the 12-year-old boy told his teacher about the killing. Well, the teacher then reported it to the Division of Family and Child Services, who contacted police. The 38-year-old mother faces one charge each of animal cruelty, child cruelty, and battery. Now listen to this story. A member of a World Health Organization panel of experts that is pondering new global taxes on emails, alcohol, tobacco, airline travel, and consumer bank transactions has charged that she was given only selective information at a group meeting, that deliberations were rushed, and that the group was manipulated by the international pharmaceuticals industry. All of her charges were strongly denied by the head of the World Health Organization's Expert Working Group on Research and Development, which is a 25-member panel of medical experts, academics, and healthcare bureaucrats, which is due to present a 98-page report in Geneva on Monday after 14 months of deliberations on new and innovative sources of funding to get money from you to reshape the global medical industry. Alex Jones is looking in on that story for us. Alex, this is another bizarre story.
It is, George. I'm really glad you got me on about this tonight. Here's the key to all of this. They're calling for mobile phone taxes, taxes on health care, lotteries, all the other issues you just mentioned, water, fuel, food. But here's the point. Fox News got a hold of this, and they have a copy of the executive summary of the report. So this really isn't being denied, except some of the members of the World Health Organization are lying and saying that this isn't true. The problem is, if we read the two different versions of the Copenhagen Treaty from last month, in Copenhagen, all of this is in here. The money transfer taxes, the water taxes, the lottery taxes, the mobile phone taxes, the stock and bond taxes, the tax on GDP of every nation paid to the UN, IMF, and World Bank, that's all in here. So when you see this and somebody leaks it, and then they lie about it and say, no, that's not what we're planning, Herman Van Rompuy, head of the EU, 2 months ago came out and said we're going to set up global taxes. In the New York Times, we have Ban Ki-moon, Secretary General of the UN, an article titled, We Can Do It, calling for all these taxes. So what they do is they push their taxes, and then when we say no, we don't want this unelected bureaucracy running our lives, paying taxes to the IMF, World Bank, and the Big Pharma, because that's what this is, they say, oh, no, you're a conspiracy theorist. That's not happening. But they can't play that game anymore. So everything in this report is separately confirmed in the Copenhagen public treaty that, again, went down in flames. And then what did Gordon Brown, Barack Obama, the head of the EU, and others say when it failed last month in late 2009? They said, you know what? We're going to go ahead and have our executive committees or the bureaucracies implement that. But then the Financial Times of London reported yesterday that agreement fell apart. So the New World Order is having giant problems right now. But think of the ways they want to control our lives.
Oh, my gosh, and get money from us. It's amazing, Alex. Alex, give out your two websites, your major ones.
Sure, Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. And my film, Fall of the Republic, free on YouTube and Google. Just Google Fall of the Republic. Very powerful. It exposes this whole system. And, George, I love you for exposing this. Thanks for trying to protect our republic.
You got it. Alex Jones. The threat of international terrorism to the United Kingdom has been raised from substantial to severe tonight, meaning that an attack there is highly likely. Alan Johnson of their Home Secretary stressed, however, that there was no intelligence to suggest an attack was imminent. So why would you raise it to severe? It makes no sense. The terrorist threat has been at substantial, meaning an attack is a strong possibility since July. There are five levels of terror threat there, ranging from low, meaning an attack is unlikely, to critical, when an attack is expected imminently. Severe is the second highest level on the scale. That's what it is now in the United Kingdom. Stocks slumped for the third straight session Friday, and worries that the White House's bank plan and China's lending curbs will mean a broader cutback in lending. Questions also arose over whether Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's term will be renewed. Google's co-founders, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, plan to sell 5 million shares apiece of their company stock. Guess what it's worth? $5.5 billion combined at current prices. The sales will occur periodically over the next 5 years and leave the two with still 48% of the voting power among stockholders, down from roughly the 59% now. But with Google CEO Eric Schmidt controlling nearly 10% of the voting power, the trio will still control the company. Beginning last Sunday, there have been now 1,000-plus earthquakes registered at Yellowstone's supervolcano. The largest of this series measured at 3.8 magnitude. If they reach the 4.0, it will most likely be cause for increased caution, monitoring, and perhaps a call for public watch. Mitch Batras, EarthChangesMedia.com, he's been watching this situation. It's heating up there, Mitch, isn't it?
It sure is, George. Glad to be with you once again.
Thank you.
Just before we went on air, another 3.0 earthquake occurred there at Yellowstone. In some ways, it's unprecedented, at least in one's lifetime. However, Yellowstone has seen this before. And when it gets to this degree, I've noticed that I have to start to back off a little bit and have a little bit more monotone because I don't want to scare people. It is true that there's been over 1,000 now, and the magnitudes are starting to get up there a little bit, 3.8, 3.7. As mentioned, if it gets into the 4.0, that kind of brings in a whole new call and attention. So we're going to monitor that very, very quickly.
Mitch, 1,000 earthquakes, though. That's a lot.
That is a lot. It is a lot. It's more than usual, and everyone is aware of that. The typical swarm in that particular area is around 200, maybe 300. However, in just last year, last February, I think I was on with you then, George, it had gone close to over 500, but now over 1,000. The first thing that they have to find out is this plate tectonic or is it magma? And so far, they're not willing to make that call.
And what's the difference as far as we're concerned?
One is earthquake. The other one is volcano.
Okay.
And they go hand in hand. So an earthquake certainly could cause the rupture of one of the lava flows, and then there you go. Kind of like Mount St. Helens phenomena. There was the earthquakes that were going
right
on. Everybody was monitoring the volcano. There was plenty of notice. They went for finally to a code red, which cleared 100-mile radius, except for those that didn't want to leave. And so there was definitely some preparation. So I do want your audience to know that, unlike earthquakes, there will be plenty of warning if any volcano is to begin to go off. So it's not, you know, it's not going to happen in minutes or even hours. It's going to be days and days and days. So if it is indeed magma, that is going to be a different alert than if it's just earthquake possibilities.
All right. Well, you keep watching it for us, Mitch.
You bet.
Mitch Batras, his website linked up on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. 1,000 earthquakes registered at Yellowstone already. Plus, humans could perhaps run as fast as 40 miles an hour, according to a new study. I have no idea how fast I run. Such a feat would lead in simply people in the dust. The world's fastest runner right now has been clocked at 28 miles an hour in a 100-meter sprint. The new findings come after researchers took a new look at the factors that limit human speed. Their conclusions: the top speed humans could reach may come down simply to how quickly muscles in the body can move. The Austrian extreme sportsman Felix Baumgartner, it's a story up there at coasttocoastam.com, says his next goal is to try to break the long-standing record for the highest ever parachute jump. It's been 50 years since the American Joe Kittinger made history by leaping from a balloon at 102,800 feet. Many have sought to repeat the feat, the decades long, but they have failed. Baumgartner, who is famous for stunts such as jumping off the Petronas Towers, aims to skydive from a balloon sent to at least 120,000 feet. Up next, an incredible story in discussion with two very important people, Christopher Valentine and Dr. Christian von Lehr, as we talk about magical powers and mystical beings on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. A couple great guests for you before we go into open lines later on in the program. First of all, Christopher Valentine is an author and is very proficient nature spirit communicator. And tonight he'll share some new insight on the magical powers of nature spirits and introduce us to some mystical beings. The title of his new work, by the way, is aptly called Magical Powers and Mystical Beings, Anyone for Gin. And we'll tell you about gin later. We're not talking about what you drink. Christopher also has his own televised program, The Christopher Valentine Show, where he brings the magic of nature into your home, your garden. Here's Christopher Valentine, first of all. Hey, Christopher, welcome back to Coast.
Thank you so much, George. It's great to be here.
And clairvoyant psychic medium Dr. Christian von Lehr is the channeler, co-author of four books on nature spirits as well. He lectures on the kingdom of nature, on spiritual consciousness, on an Eastern spiritual philosophy. Now, he has spoken on Coast to Coast. He's talked about 2012 and its meaning, and he also provided a live channel of Michael Jackson 2 days after his passing. Right? You remember it. He was on with Ian Punnett. And he's also recently shared his prophecies for 2010. He's the producer for Mind, Body, Spirit TV. You'll be able to look for Dr. Christian von Lehr's new nationally televised series, Messenger, that begins airing the first quarter of this year. Christian, welcome to the program.
Hi, George. Nice to be here.
You too. You too. Boy, lots have been going on in this world, but in the world of mysticism, it seems to be growing. And in your specific area of expertise here, Christian, nature people, tell me about this.
Well, nature spirits or nature people are a form of life. Now, there is a distinction between nature spirits and nature people. Nature spirits are a spiritual form of life, essentially, and so they have a spirit, just as we do. But when they individualize, then we start referring to them as nature people. So all of us have heard of elves and gnomes and leprechauns. Those are more individualized. They have something analogous to an ego, so we call them nature people. What's important, though, is that they had the same beginning in existence as we did. They started off in spirit in this manifested universe. Now, when I say manifested universe, I'm not referring to just this physical level that we all exist on right now. Mm-hmm. There are like seven layers to this. Of course, we have the other side, and there's heaven above that. But way up at the top of this hierarchy is where spirit exists. So they start up there just as we did. And they also have a soul, which is a body that carries our lessons, our remembrances from lifetime to lifetime. We carry that over and collect that, so they also have a soul like we do. And they also have, before this manifested universe, a monad, which is a monadic essence, which is what we humans have as well, which is that unique distinction that we have that exists when the universe itself goes away and comes back, because everything's evolving. So at those upper levels, they are very similar to us. They are just another form of life. Now, they are part of what's called an angelic kingdom, also often referred to as the Deva kingdom, which is the bright and shining ones. But going back to the oldest of times, for example, the Sumerians, where Iraq would be, could be 40,000 years, and many other cultures since then have spoken of these shining ones in the same way. No matter where it's spoken of in the world, they're called builders of form. And this is where they start taking on the difference. Builders of form bring structure to things in this universe. Imagine, if you will, this world, this earth, coming together, sort of a swarm of primordial gases. In fact, you can think of that, the whole universe that way. Something had to induce something in this universe to start taking shapes, to build solidity, to build atoms and molecules and particles. Well, the angelic kingdom is the kingdom that's responsible for that. So the entire kingdom is referred to the builders of form, because they start putting things into a shape that comes across to them through some divine plan. Now, well, we're speaking about some heavy things right now, and of course we're going to get into the whimsical stuff a little bit later on, but it's, of course, good to have a little bit of foundation.
Sure.
These nature spirits are parallel to us. They exist. They are very real. They're observable by many people, and we'll talk about how to see them and why some people can't see them on this show. And they have a purpose, that producing form. Now, why building form is so essential is, if there was no starting place, we wouldn't be here. So they evolve through levels that we call correspondences now, of fire, air, water, and earth. And those are really states of consciousness. But in those different states, they start bringing shape to things and building objects, so to speak.
Was this their role? Is that their purpose?
That is their role and purpose right now. But as we get into this, you're going to find out there's something very spectacular going on, and we're a part of it. There's something we have going on in common. But the fact that they built all those things allowed kingdoms to evolve. For example, there's the mineral kingdom, which is pretty much pertains to them. So you have your rocks and your crystals and all those minerals. And by producing that kingdom, George, then we were able to have a plant kingdom. The plant kingdom came out much, much later. And in fact, you know, we didn't even start with plants. I think we had trees, okay? Then we had plants and flowers. And until we had those two kingdoms, which they worked on and continue to work on, the world was not, could not sustain what became known as the animal kingdom, because they were dependent on those plants and those minerals. And after those three kingdoms ensued, then we were able to support a human kingdom, which is what we're in right now. So you see, it was essential that they do their work, so we build up the foundation for us to exist. And I'm not saying that we're done yet also. I'm going to say that man's going somewhere too.
And I assume that if there's life on other planets, they probably also worked on those?
Yes. The nature spirit is something consistent in the universe. When you study all the old esoteric philosophies, in fact, all religions were an esoteric philosophy at one time, we find that the universe itself is consistent, and that's why we have these phrases like as above, so below. And that's why we can look for the patterns of things in nature, by the way, because they build the same patterns that we see in the cosmos. They build it into the very plants and minerals that we see here. It's consistent throughout the universe. So this pattern is something that they do also. But since they do that, it suggests that there's a consistency to life throughout the universe.
Right.
And in fact, you know, I think it was just, a few months ago, that NASA produced a photo showing that in our own galaxy, there is natural sugar occurring in phenomenally large clouds out in our galaxy. and they've taken pictures of that. And that's sort of the element that they're looking for, because with sugar, which nature spirits of some form had to make, it allows RNA to be produced, then DNA, and eventually we come along, something like us.
We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back with both Christopher Valentine and Dr. Christian Von Lehr in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And on our Saturday program, Ian Punnett joins us, of course, and he'll be talking about the Emperor's new drugs. And then on Sunday, George Knapp with us as we talk about tribal Bigfoot on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion on magical powers and mystical beings on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We're going to jump over to Christopher in just a moment to find out what these nature spirits look like. We're with Dr. Christian Von Lehr as well. In your TV show, Christian, it's on the air now. It's just started, isn't it?
Yeah, it's up in, I think, Portland at the moment, and working through Oregon. And by February 15th, it should be everywhere in the country.
Super. Now, Christopher, what do these nature spirits look like? Anyways, describe them.
Well, George, it's very important to know from the beginning that nature spirits are not dense like you and me. They're made of a very, let me tell you, I get so many emails.
Rephrase that, huh?
That one, Christopher.
Well, you know, I also have a YouTube show, and it's like, that's the main question. People and little kids, too, they want and expect to see dense nature spirits. And I tell everybody, they are made of a very light material called etheric matter. They're almost transparent to the human eye, but can be seen in bright color and form with practice. Depending on the type of nature spirit, the forms do differ, though. Gnomes, for example, are usually about a foot to a foot and a half in height and have a stouter, stocky appearance. They originated in the area of Scandinavia, but are known around the world. They look like statuary that you can get at home and garden stores with their iconic tall red and green conical hats. They're also seen wearing backpacks and big galosh-type boots or even clogs. Elves, on the other hand, are very tall and thin, some of the tallest of all the nature spirits, and are usually about 3 feet in height. It is important to note, though, that nature spirits can and do change their height. They will usually, though, make themselves smaller rather than larger. When I first started seeing gnomes in the garden, they appeared to about 2 to 3 inches in height.
Jeez. Now, yes. Why do they wear that kind of garb, Christopher?
Well, they all have different signatures about them. The gnomes are just associated with those red and green. For instance, the leprechauns have that typical black top hat with the buckle on the front, and it just kind of goes along with their personality. But one important trait that the leprechauns do have is a vest. And what's important about that they say it helps them traverse up into the astral plane where they can make seemingly magical things happen for us. So there is a purpose to some of their garb. And again, with leprechauns, they have some of the stereotypical things that you think of with the gold, old-fashioned timepieces in their pocket with the chains emanating from that all-important vest that the fairies, by the way, make for them, because they said they're the only ones that have the delicate hands to make this very important magical vest that they use. They also have a typical old-fashioned type pipe that they hold in their hand. So they're all different, but they all have traits that go along with each type.
There are other characteristics that we usually overlook, George, too. Like their ears are a little longer. Most of the nature spirits or nature people have sort of longer ears.
Like Spock's?
Yeah, something like Spock's. Very good. But they move, you know. If you watch a gnome closely, you'll see the ears actually move out from the head a little bit, and they will tilt, the top will tilt down and move around to help them get a better focus sound-wise.
Huh.
And their noses are more proficient than ours because they actually determine distance and their locale with the nose. And they have unusual feet, too. Their appendages work a little bit differently because they're more used to hopping over rocks and climbing things, so they function a little bit better. You know, you asked a really good question. I just wanted to elaborate on what your discussion there was on their attraction to the garb and the colors.
Yeah.
All nature spirits are sort of a subset of the energy that we are as humans. So we don't normally perceive the energy that we're made of, but nature spirits resonate to different frequencies of energy. So the gnomes, for example, actually resonate with the two frequencies of the color red and green. And so when you put those two colors together, it actually creates an environment that they can relate to. And that's why when you're going to attract them, we often tell people to use some red Christmas lights and some green Christmas lights together, because they emit a frequency that's natural to them. And the leprechauns that Christopher was mentioning, the combinations of green and gold are a frequency that they function in more naturally. Green and white is pertinent to the elves. And I'm not sure if Chris was going to elaborate more on the fairies, but
They're associated with pastel colors. So they said, think of sky blue outside. Think of the lightest sky blue you can think of, and that is the color that they resonate to. They also resonate to very pale greens, yellows, blues. And they're, you know, talking about their garb again, they have very, very light material. And when I see the female fairies, for example, they have great big hoop dresses with beautiful pastel shades coming out of them. And what's important to note, again, about the fairies also is that out of all the nature spirits, and many, many people see fairies, and we ask this question in lectures all around the country, we get the same answer. The difference with fairies is that they have an inner glow about them that's very bright. And so when you see a fairy, it's like the light's coming out of their garb or their clothes. So that's very interesting, too.
Why does Hollywood depict, for example, leprechauns as being demonic or evil?
Well, you know, if there's anything that irritates both my co-author, Christopher, and myself, it's that particular question, because it is literally impossible for a gnome, a leprechaun, elf, or fairy to be negative or evil in any way, because, again, they are sourced from that angelic kingdom. They have not gone through the evolutionary stage that we have, and you learn those negative or bad or denser things by being here in the physical. They aren't quite here yet. They're still part of the angelic kingdom, so they have never learned those things. So I think Hollywood does that because I think they would take any subject and try and make it, I don't want to necessarily say fearful, but dramatic in some way.
I guess now, more people would go see an evil leprechaun in a movie than a nice benevolent.
Yeah, but I'm going to give them credit in this regard. Most people that I've had, there will be more people that have had a negative experience with life other than this physical realm. I'm not speaking just of nature spirits. There will be more people that have experienced something unpleasant than pleasant, and this is why. Because beyond this realm that we're in, there's another side, like where we go when we dream every night or when we pass over. We go to the middle of that or above, George. So whatever's below that middle point is a diminished consciousness or negative. And as we have stress and difficulties in life, we actually tend to draw those to us. And so most of us will be struggling. If you consider life over the past 7.5 million years, we will be have a coarser existence, so we're going to be draw upon that plane. So we will have unpleasantness. So we tend to associate that unpleasantness with leprechauns and nature people. Now, part of the problem, George, is they tend to use the word elemental also, which is incorrect. You know, and this actually came from Madame Blavatsky in Theosophy.
Yeah.
But she made a mistake, and she and her cohort, Mr. Judge, tried to correct it. They just couldn't get into the printing process back then. But that elemental term and elementaries refers to that diminished consciousness on the middle of the other side, the astral plane, and below. And so we will naturally draw those to us because of our emotions, because that's an emotional plane. So that's the other mistake. You know, since we talked about Blavatsky, I should tell you something really interesting. When she introduced this theosophy and this Eastern wisdom, basically, to the westernized world,
right,
her first objective, I don't think people know this, her first agenda item was to teach people how to see nature spirits. That was the plan. And the reason for that is if she could teach people to see nature spirits, which are much easier to see, by the way, than anything on the other side, or even an angel, which is a little bit higher in consciousness, because they're a little closer to us, it should be easier to see nature spirits. But here's the other more important reason why everybody technically can see them is because nature spirits are of this physical level of existence, just like you and I are.
How do you see them? How do you do that?
Okay, at first I had, again, I am a clairvoyant medium, so I had the advantage of knowing to look differently at things, and I did it in a psychic way. And it took a long time, actually years, to develop a way of the real way to see them, which is to use your eyes differently. And you know, Chris and I used to do this many years ago. We used to take people on retreats to see nature spirits. We would usually have to take them out into the forest and the mountains for sometimes weeks at a time. We have it down to about 40 minutes to an hour now. We can teach people how to see nature spirits. We do this everywhere in the country and usually for no charge. But here's the deal. Because they're of this physical realm, everybody can see them. And here's what goes on. Our eyes have a construction that allows us to see two different ways. We all tend to focus right now and see things three-dimensionally because we use the inner part of our eye, which is made of those cone structures. You have to think of your Discovery Channel, National Geographic, looking at the bees, you know, those type of programs where they show you the construction of the eye. And there's conical structures that make us focus three-dimensionally. If we use the outer part of the eye, which is actually larger, we have elongated structures called rods, and those rods tend to distinguish intensities of color. And so since they're not color-oriented, we tend to see things in black and white or shades of intensity. And also it causes us to see outlines. So when people see nature spirits for the first time, they will usually see outlines. And also, technically, this is the same way we would teach someone to see life on the other side. And they'd normally come in with an outline of color. But every realm of existence, like the other side where people pass over to or where we dream at night, it tends to look yellow. And so consistently, when we bring in people from that realm, they will come in yellow. And so when Chris and I go around the country teaching people how to see nature spirits, we actually have to teach people to see passed over spiritual embodied forms first because we're willing to.
Now, can you see them in your house or are they always just out in nature?
Nature spirits are everywhere. Chris, you want to take that one?
Yeah. Gnomes in particular and leprechauns will come in your house. Now, we don't see them again in full form density like us, and we don't see them all the time. It does take a lot of energy on their behalf to come in with a lot of color. But leprechauns in particular, out of all the nature spirits, when you see them, there is no mistaking about it. They come in very clear, almost dense-like to people. And the nature spirits, like gnomes, the original meaning of gnome actually means house nature spirits. So gnomes are around people. Everybody has two gnomes, whether they realize it or not, just like everybody has an archangel, a guardian angel, and guides. Everybody has two gnomes, and one of their main purposes is to help with our health. They are made of etheric matter, and we also have an etheric double body, which is also known as our health aura. And gnomes help keep our health aura going. They're also, I think Christian will probably mention this too, at the very beginning of life, they take over with bringing in minerals not only to plants but into the mesh of our body.
Yeah, that's a very important topic we sort of skimmed over. But remember, we mentioned they're builders of form.
Right.
They're actually part of the process of bringing us into existence because we're not dropped out of the heaven or whatever into this solid physical form. We go through stages of development. And so we go through sort of an etheric stage where we look like a webbing, so to speak, a webbing of energy. And it suggests something to the nature spirits, what minerals are required. And this is, they often speak of a plan and of the plan for everything. They just sort of follow the blueprints like we were building a bicycle at Christmas time. So they know that slot A goes into groove B, that type of thing. And so they follow the plan. But in order for us to become physical, they have to do their work. Now, Christopher mentioned that we all have two gnomes. That's true, but that speaks to the first subject I mentioned when I said they have a soul just like we do. We have an individualized soul because we are that evolved. Nature spirits have not become man yet. So at this point, they're usually dual when we speak of gnomes, and there's usually six to a soul when we speak of elves. And the other nature spirit types will vary. Actually, there's like 6,000 types of nature
spirits. Well, are we more evolved than they are?
We're more evolved in consciousness. Now, evolution, when we speak of evolution, we're speaking of consciousness, George. And mankind right now is simply at a state of where we're trying to be thinkers. We're trying to be aware. And so, and we are self-aware, right? So we have an ego, which actually exists as a body also somewhere up there.
It sometimes gets in the way.
And that ego actually helps us focus because we have this mind that we're developing. And we would just literally go crazy if everything in the universe was presented to us at once. We wouldn't be able to find our way. So each of us tends to have a focus, and our ego is what houses that focus, so to speak. And we live our life following these inclinations we have. And we get that focus from the soul before we're born, because it keeps our lessons from lifetime to lifetime and suggests what we should be doing in this particular lifetime. So our ego helps us think and find a way in life. Now, the nature spirits, we'll take the gnomes again, since they come in groups of two, can't quite reach that level of individualization. So they're like two halves of a person.
Interesting.
And so when you meet two gnomes, and this happens all over the country.
I'd like to meet just one.
Well, when we're in Los Angeles, you're going to be there next month, right?
Yeah. The conscious
I will teach you how when we do our...
All right. You're on that one.
Yeah, okay. Not only will we teach you how to see... nature spirits, George, but we also teach you how to see your aura, astral bodies, which is the golden bodies Christian was mentioning, as well as we bring in guardian angels, archangels come in, crossed over relatives and guides. So we do the whole gamut. And that particular post-conference event is going to be also tying into 2012. So Christian is also going to bring in alien spirit forms for people to see. And because there was such a huge interest in Michael Jackson after he channeled him on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
We've been speaking with Michael Jackson all the time, and he also wants to come in for people to see in the audience and also have some words on 2010. So we're looking forward to that next month.
Okay.
We've had tens of thousands of emails and posts regarding that channel, and we have a whole following, basically. So during that show where we're going to be teaching people how to actually see alien life, because alien life exists. And what Chris and I can do is, using the techniques we've used to develop to teach people how to see nature spirits and life on the other side, we can also teach people to see the inference of alien life. Now, here's the way we do it. Everybody has guides behind us. We've all heard that term of having guides.
Sure.
And influence.
I remember Hans Christian King would always say spirit guides.
Right, spirit guides. Yeah. Now, when we have people in the audience that are actually resonating with life from other places, their energy in their aura actually sort of stands up at an angle and isn't curved like a typical person's is. When we see that, we know that there's probably an alien guide for that person. If we keep looking, we will find a type of outline of a human-looking being, but that looks more like the Greys or the other people that we see on television when people have experiences of life in other worlds. I mean, sometimes we see some kinds that aren't the ones that you see on television. But here's the thing. Because of the technique we use, everyone in the audience can see them as well. It does no good for me or Christopher to just tell people these things happen. We try to make it real because we use members from the audience, and usually we'll pick those that have a connection. I'll be able to pick in an instant the people in the audience. Again, this has to do with clairvoyance, who are going to be good examples of this, have them up there, and by the way, you would be, have them up there, and the audience will see what I'm bringing in. So I will help you bring them in, but the audience will see it also. And that's what makes it sort of a scientific proof, because everybody's getting the same experience, and it's reproducible from show to show. There's a reason, though, that we can connect with the alien life, because they always come in up at what we call the mental plane level, which happens to be where religions refer to heaven as being. All heavens are like this third level up, which we call the mental plane, which is where we think, basically. Our thoughts are up there. Only the brain works down here. So that universal highway, the actually it's called the cosmic superhighway, exists up there in the middle of this mental plane. And from that point, we can reach anywhere in the universe. And so we find that there are many common traits for everyone that's connected to life in other worlds or has a strong interest. I can go through a string of traits, and everybody will have the same one, and they're also visible to other people. But, again, we're going through all this process usually just to teach people how to see nature.
Well, but that's incredible. Hey, when we come back, I want to ask both of you, what do these nature spirits do, actually? Both their websites, Christians and Christophers, linked up at coasttocoastam.com, mistoftheoracle.com. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we'll continue chatting about these magical powers and mystical beings, and then later in the next hour, we'll take phone calls with them.